It's the Creep Dive. We're back again. Oh my God, we're back again. This is the fourth time we've started.
Look, there was a few little false starts. There was a few leads in shot. Your camera's up there. Say hello to the people of the world.
Welcome in. Did you see Mike Tyson beat the head off some guy in a plane?
No.
Gas.
Is it?
Kind of.
Are we okay with that?
I think so. But he drove him to it.
Okay, what did he say? I could take you in a fight, Mike Tyson?
Probably. But then...
I love that. You ever see the men on the internet... awful creatures who
rude.
Think that they could take Katie Taylor in a fight. Something it's about 70% of men believe that they could beat Katie Taylor in a fight.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I'm one of them. I believe I could take her. The key thing about it would be the element of surprise.
No one would expect it from you.
Exactly. And maybe approach from behind. Behind a curtain. While she was just casually watching television.
A boxing class. You know, in Cambrazzle Street, it's the boxing gym up there. It got quite popular.
Yeah.
It's really, really good. Vic is a world-renowned boxer and he's the trainer in there. And I went to a few classes in there and I saw white spots when I was leaving.
Oh.
It was walking out and the whole world going white and being faint. One time Lydia vomited after the class.
That's the level.
And then
of intensity.
I hid in the bathroom one time.
Are you pitched against one another?
Yeah, it's vicious.
Oh, I don't know about
No, you do all your training and you do all the rope stuff and then you're working on a bag.
And then you go into
the ring. Do a lot of skipping and then you should do this game with each other where you have to hold your defenses. Anyway, I honest to God,
bam, bam,
never been put through. I mean, I'm not a workout gal, but never experienced exercise like it.
Good to know.
Would recommend for those who enjoy exercise.
Yes.
Would not recommend for everyone else.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
This week, I've got a story. Title, Pigeon King, and a man who just got himself carried away and in the attempt to turn pigeon into the new chicken.
I
saw a video.
Edible.
Do you know what it's called? Squab. Squab?
Squab.
Yeah. But there's just not enough meat on a pigeon. Anyway, I could tell you about that. But then I dip my toe back into the honey badger scene.
I do love honey badgers.
Ah, real.
I do love a honey badger. And it's something, there's something summery about honey badgers.
They're just endlessly positive.
most people probably encounter them when they're traveling. That's where they always in my head. I'm like, oh, your summer holidays, a honey badger.
Yeah.
I saw a video yesterday on the Tiki-Toki of chickens flying down a hill.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Wholesome.
Yeah, and apparently total free range, unclipped chickens can fly very low and for a couple of feet only.
Well, not when they're taken off on top of a mountain. They could come down.
They come thundering down that mountain and they all jump off and fly.
Absolutely.
It was glorious.
I've done that with a hang glider.
So have I.
Yeah, I had a housemate who was a very intense chicken who loved hang gliding. Mm. And he was always kind of being like, oh, you should come hang gliding with me sometime. And I was like, I should. But the awkward conversation, just hanging there, flying around, was putting me off.
Yeah.
Eventually, I was like, yeah, give us an old
let's do it.
Fly. Let's do this.
Let's fall in love.
As predicted.
Horrendous.
The making of conversation. The flying majestic. The small talk. Crushing.
No.
And it was a great day for it, as he kept saying, in my ear. Because I was sort of suspended below him.
I hate that. You're in a sleeping bag below.
Yes. And he was in my ear being like, great day for it. Great day for it. And I was like,
I'm
very hungry.
It.
Will we land?
Really?
Will we
enjoy
land?
It.
Oh, I loved the flying.
Yeah.
Like I said, the small talk. Absolutely.
Ruined it.
Chronic.
And it's hard because your entry into that kind of flying, you always have to be tandemed with someone down to. There's no way you can just get yourself a hang glider.
Can't just jump.
Introverts are just left out of all of these sports all of the time.
Or they have to overcome both the fear of flying and the fear of extroverting.
Small
also,
talk.
The hang glider wing thing, you have to run off a ledge, but run together.
Oh, that's right.
Very shuffly. And then, nobody talks about this enough, but the actual position after a couple of hours, loved them at a distance. It was 2 hours up there.
Wow.
Apparently the thermals were amazing.
You couldn't have been.
Two hours.
God, 2 hours.
You could have gone to France.
Yeah. But the thing, the position is like lying front ways in a hammock.
Yeah.
Backbreaking. But what I would say this, the landing was one of the most exciting things I've ever experienced because you come in really low at speed and it's such an insane perspective to be flying just inches above the grass, shooting across a field.
Great.
It's wild. When else in your life are you ever doing
and then how
that?
Do you land?
You just come to a stop. Like a,
your legs eventually hit
you
the
slow,
ground.
You do slow.
Run with it.
Like, we were kind of lying, but maybe he brought his legs down and I was kind of lying. Yeah, he was just riding me at that stage like a little banana.
Steering you
that
with a
joystick.
It
was painful.
It's
back-breaking.
Like a taxi driving experience where you have to do the chat. Do you ever wonder what would win in a fight? A honey badger.
100 chickens.
Or Komodo dragon.
Oh, honey badger.
A honey badger. My understanding of the honey badger is that they are the like the top of the food chain they could fight off.
They are, what do you call the predators that are at the top?
Ruthless.
But peak. They have no natural predators. Except us.
Except
with
us.
A gun.
Yeah.
But other than that, no. I think there is much contention online about
what
who would
about,
win.
What about like a cheetah? Would that not?
No. Honey badgers would easily.
Just punch one in the face.
Well, you might remember from Stoffel or things I might have told you about honey badgers. What they do is they go for the groin. They've been known to kill rhinos. They rip out the testicles and penis area. They let the animal slowly bleed to death. And they go in via that hole and eat it from the inside out.
Oh my God. They are without ruth.
They're
ruth
amazing.
Less.
They've also been known to use tools. As we know from Stoffel. But they will go after ostrich eggs. Impossible to penetrate. Not for a honey badger. Who will lift it up with its long clawed hands and bash it over a rock.
Could we not lift it up and bash it over a rock?
Well, yes, but the, okay.
an ostrich egg
is not a peak predator.
Okay, yes, absolutely.
But
God, yeah, that's really preying on an infant. That's a bad look for
this
a honey badger.
They are
this.
So funny looking.
They are amazing. And the winner probably is a honey badger. Although the Komodo dragon, you might remember as well, it weighs about 350 pounds. But it has those that bacteria that will infest inside. So one bite probably kill you because all the teeth... juice around the teeth will eventually start eating you from the outside in.
There's
anyway.
So many funny videos of people who have Komodo dragons in their back gardens like dogs.
Yeah.
And
bad idea.
There's people who have done such stupid things on camera and then said, I'll share this with YouTube. And it's great.
It's great.
It's great.
Taking one for the team. What do you want to hear? So I know you have a big, huge one.
I don't know what to do about this, guys. Like,
you're gonna
will we
to
do it so. Over two hives?
Yeah.
Like, it's been threatening for so long. I thought it would be one that I'd never do because it's too mainstream. But I realized there was only one way to exorcise this demon. And it is by telling you all about the cannibal of Milwaukee.
Jeffrey Dahmer.
Jeffrey.
Old JD. What would Jeffers do? That's the little bracelet that we should bring out as our next creep merch.
Speaking of bad
I'll tell
men.
You what Jeffers would do.
Yeah.
Dead people. Mm. Almost exclusively.
That's interesting, isn't
yeah.
it?
Literally, in terms of like, it has everything.
Yeah. It's got a lot.
It has everything.
He covered all bases.
He really got very expansive with his activities.
Creative.
Right.
So,
I can't wait.
Well, speaking of kind of bad men, Netflix documentary came out, John Wayne Gacy.
Oh, yeah.
I powered through that. It's quite good.
Oh, Jesus, Gacy. What a fucker.
Who was he?
The clown.
The clown.
Oh, yes. Okay.
30 plus
buried
dead
in,
boys
yes,
and men.
Buried in his home.
That's not something I'm going to welcome into my life this week.
Not for this week.
But I'll give you the 17 dead boys and men instead.
From Jeffrey. Okay,
massive
we can take
fucking
that.
Trigger.
I have for you something called the Matilda effect.
Ooh.
Which is the historical act of men taking credit for women's work. And I'm going to tell you some stories that are going to blow your mind.
Well, I can't. I was thinking telekinesis, but no.
Not named after
thinking...
Matilda named after a scientist Matilda who
see, again,
put her name
and
to
I
the
was
theory.
Thinking Roald Dahl.
Well, he stole it from obviously this original Matilda
and went straight for the giant cake.
Yes.
And also
great
I brought a
though.
Giant cake for our lunch. It's Ooh. Over there.
Okay, well I tell you about Arlen Galbraith.
Please do.
Yeah.
Picture this, a man with a plan. Now, in Ireland's defence, he was doing fine, just living his life, and then a terrible incident happened to his wife, who ended up kind of infirm. So she needed looking after, and Arlan was under pressure to create a business that was going to work in order to finance him and his wife's existence.
What year are we?
We are, so the business kicked off in 2001.
Okay.
So that's the kind of era that we're in. Trial happened in 2013. So we have this many years to cover.
Mm-hmm.
So Arlan knew a bit about a lot of stuff.
Like he was good Jack of all trades.
Jack of all trades, but he did know a lot about pigeons. Pigeons were with him forever in his life.
Mm.
He turned to them in his time of need, and this was a time of need for Arlan. Galbraith, right? He was sort of, people liked him. He was happy to kick off this business and knew that his friends would come in on it. And here's what it was. He's going to arrive to your house with a couple of pigeons. He's going to tell you that these are bred for perfection in terms of flying ability.
Okay.
Racing pigeons, professionals.
Okay. Right.
Does he bring them in a suitcase?
Probably. He brings them on his two
cage
fingers.
Under a cloak. One of those giant cages under the cloak, and you whip them off and there are all the pigeons.
Ta-da! And you could just start with two. And at first he'd be like, I can only sell you two. That's like, there's not enough of these lads to go round. Yeah. The genetic line is tight.
Oh,
what I'm looking
good.
For here.
Scarcity.
Scarcity is good. I'm looking for you to look after these birds and they're going to lay eggs. Okay, the breed, and then I'm going to come back and I'm going to buy the babies for you, guaranteed. I'm going to buy the babies from you and this is the plan. So you're like,
this is like the fella that we had before who was selling people sewing machines.
Yes.
And then said, I'll come back. Was that the founder of LuLaRoe?
No, that was a guy who was eventually invented the three-wheel car.
Yes, it was like, I'll sell you the sewing machine and then I'll buy your wares.
Yeah, so
same
similar
principle.
Kind of thing. Now, Arlan went on to be accused of a Ponzi scheme.
That because it is.
But things went slightly different for Arlan, because yes, you would think to yourself, this immediately is a scam. But you'll never guess who came back 3 weeks later.
Arlan.
With money.
And for what?
For the babies. So what you got to know about pigeons
did
is...
Did you ever see a pigeon baby?
He's pyramid scheming himself.
They're so cute.
Well, so pigeons have a mating and a laying season, something like March to July. And they lay one or two eggs in a go. And, they'll just keep laying them. And then, it seems like the ultimate thing. You feed them a bit of grain. You have a lovely cage in your back garden. And you're like, yeah, okay, Arlan, I'm going to take more than two. Give me eight.
Uh-oh.
Oh.
And Arlan's like, all right, I'll see if I can work it out for you.
Because you're my favourite.
Exactly. People got involved.
So the first visit is like the gateway visit.
Exactly.
And then
and it
they're
wasn't,
hooked.
The thing is, they were going, these babies, like it's very little input for a great output. So he was paying you more than sometimes $25, $30 per chick.
Mm.
So you're like,
and how much do you buy the birds for?
Thousands.
But he's kind of tricking them into being amateur pigeon breeders for him.
Yes.
Usually genius.
It is kind of genius, but then things went so strange.
What do we call them again? Fanciers.
Pigeon fanciers. Do you ever hear of a lever? A Birmingham roller.
No.
So there's a fucking few things pigeons can do. So not only can they fly at speeds of 90 kilometers an hour, that might be miles or kilometers, very fast with the homing. So when you race them, you let them off in one location, 300 kilometers away, you wait for them to come to you. And then the race is who arrives first or who arrives at all.
You don't know who cheated in the interim.
Well, there's lots of that
like
going on.
Like Tour de France style, somebody could have been towing that pigeon.
Yeah, or someone were getting on the subway and getting off just before.
Yeah. Or just remember that lad who got the train with his bike?
Yeah.
Or the guy with the cork in his teeth.
Or the marathon runner in Boston who got on the subway and jumped out and just rejoined the thing and won without
a
sweat.
That's a trier. There's always just going to be
an
a percentage
Irish influencer who did something
of
similar.
Cheating. Oh, you're right.
There was.
Was there?
I can't even remember who that
don't
was.
Don't even try. Put that in your mouth.
Okay, so back to Arlan. Mm-hmm. Things were going, I think what I'm saying is, anyway, whatever. Things were going great. He was coming back. It seemed to be a thing that was working. Except I know what you're thinking, and I was thinking the same. Where are these pigeons that he's kind of he's accumulating enormous volumes of pigeons? But
is he not reselling them?
He's reselling them. But then,
so the "where is the pigeons" didn't cross my mind.
Basically,
oh, really? I'm obviously a con artist. You're ahead of me. I was like straight away, pick up the baby pigeons. Yeah. Next door
follow
neighbor,
the money.
Look at the success they're having next door. Would you like to buy two pigeons?
Yeah.
And he's got this like informal pigeons breeding sweatshop going on.
He does.
And all the staff of his sweatshop are just gormlessly delighted with themselves with no idea.
Well, they are. And some of them would have bought so many that eventually they're just trying to make their money back at this initially. Because you put up loads of money up front for all of these high quality breeding pigeons. And then you're like, okay, 25 quid a pop for the eggs and the chicks. They're coming back slowly, but surely I'm going to make a profit. But the fucking amount of people that Arlan was selling pigeons to would make your eyes simply water. Anyway, let's go back into this. So here we are. Everyone's getting pigeons. We're in Ontario in Canada. We're heading to different provinces in Canada. Back home at the ranch, Arlan has 14 barns full of pigeons.
14 barns?
In one barn alone, he's got 40,000 pigeons.
Oh what? My god.
The noise.
How to remember all the names. Name tag system.
Okay. So he
little tag.
Maybe color coded all the red marked pigeons, John.
Mm.
He was churning through the sales, so much so that at one point he'd taken nearly 42 million from farmers.
What?
42 million.
Million. That's how much pigeons he'd sold off. Now,
oh,
bear
wait,
in mind,
not the money.
So he'd taken in 42 million, but he'd given the people the pigeons, right? But
okay.
With the promise that he was buying them back, and he was buying them back,
okay.
Up to a point.
Okay.
So he got this new accountant into the business, and she was like, all right, just look at the books there, brought up the ledgers. Sit down there, Arlan, we need to go through a few things. And she said to Arlan that in order to, you have signed us up here, our obligations to buy back pigeons, the amount we're obliged to buy back is $356 million worth of pigeons.
Oh,
and
no.
Arlan was like, I know, it's gotten a little bit out of hand, right? But the plan is still viable.
Still solid.
How now, is it viable?
Well, the reality is it wasn't at all.
Yeah.
Because
he's really fucked
is.
Himself over. He's the only
know,
person participating in this pyramid scheme.
Yes, but there's no benefit to
what
anyone.
What he needed to do was to get them to sell the baby pigeons for their money
yeah.
back to their neighbors.
It's gone in the wrong direction.
We've got a good pigeon business.
He needs
here.
A whiteboard with three arrows and, you know, him, arrow, a gormless person, arrow, pigeon, whatever.
True.
Question,
now,
how's
yes.
the wife doing?
I'm not sure. She was never
she's
mentioned again. I have to give credit here.
The cacophony of the pigeons, I'd say she's worsening by the day.
Now,
she's
this,
got $42 million.
Well, she doesn't really because it's all in pigeons.
Oh, they got to have been taking the money out somewhere
okay,
though, here
while,
along the way.
While I'm here, this is, oh, I got all of this information from a New York Times magazine article by John Mulalem. So we thank you kindly for your amazing article. But there's a various YouTube videos as well, kind of shortening this story, but it's incredible. So back into the game, right? The wife's there, still alive. The money is tight and not there at all because the amount of money he's spending to maintain the 14 barns, he's got
sometimes.
People all over the place working for him
You'd
now.
Say he'd have quite a lot of overheads.
Yeah.
Pigeons, birds are
overhead. Sorry now, Jesus. That
it's
was,
not funny when you have to explain what it
that
was.
Well, the whole scheme was for the birds.
Hey!
Anyway, we're back in it. So Arlan's like vibrating with stress now at this point. And he's like, oh shit.
I know the feeling.
I've definitely gone too far into this. And how I pivot. I need to pivot.
Take out expensive life insurance policies on all the pigeons.
Mm.
And then set fire to those barns.
Well, the thing
Jesus
was,
Christ.
I'm sorry. Look, if 4 million pigeons need to die.
Well, you need to, you're going to be upset about what happens later. But anyway, back in the game, he's like, I need to pivot. Chickens. We got to start eating them. This could turn into food. Okay. I'm going to take over the chicken market with pigeons.
It's been a long time since the chicken market was innovated.
Exactly. And people love to eat pigeons in high-end restaurants. Sometimes you'll get a pigeon, will you?
Will you, Quail?
I don't think it's high-end.
I've never met a pigeon in a restaurant.
And there's various reasons for that. Very little meat, not massively delicious, and
fucking
expensive.
It's like rabbit. It's so fucking time-consuming to get at the fucking meat.
Absolutely it is.
Yeah.
Did you also listen to The Daily did a big kind of expose on chickens?
Michael Balboa.
My God, yeah, so it's desperate. We eat enormous volumes of chickens every year. But you're right, Cass. It's an untapped market. Nothing has ever come close.
Wait a minute. What about the chicken Kiev? I mean, that.
You could do a pigeon Kiev, Soph.
Or the chicken nuggies.
A pigeon nugget.
The preparation of the chicken has probably innovated somewhat, but like it's still all chicken.
Oh, yeah, okay. Like the turkey like, tried, but yeah. Like, God love it.
There's got to be another bird that's edible.
There is many other, all of them are, we're all edible when it comes to it.
Everything's edible if you're brave enough.
Everything's just pre-food.
But nobody
wants, as Dammer would say.
Nobody really wants to eat the pigeons. Arlan's panicking as well because he can't necessarily let the old people that were in on the business know that he's pivoted.
Yeah.
They'll get concerned. Ooh. So the story of the sales pitch slightly changed. But again, churning out many, many pigeons. And the pigeon volume was just up and up and up. And this is, Ireland has 12 or 14 barns full of 40,000 pigeons per barn. But so do some of the people he supplied to.
What? They've got barns on the go
now? It's gone out of hand.
It's gone way, way out of hand. We're talking about maybe 500,000 pigeons, right? Just churning away.
Them.
But also, like, the idea that they're racing pigeons is just nonsensical. They got some specialist in to check them out, and he was like, this is a genetic mess. None
these are
of
just
these.
Pigeons.
These are literally just pigeons. And he's watered down the,
Oh, no, the gene pool is muddied.
The thing about Garland as well is he got all his best mates in on it. So they were like, oh, lads, what's going on here? And they all ended up on trial. And in the end, Ireland decided he was going to, you know, defend himself, and it went terribly, terribly wrong. So anyway, the wife was there in the background worrying, but, you know, not too concerned. Ireland was on the road 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. And when he wasn't there, he was in the barns fancying his pigeons.
What he should have done is got loads of them tied to strings and started selling them as some sort of like aero vehicle.
But he very... Yes.
Mm.
Like wearing a long trench and all the pigeons pick him up of and then he can fly through the
hang
sky.
Glide.
I mean,
yeah.
That I'm sure he considered all options in a serious manner.
We need
manner.
A redesign of the merch.
So there
that
was
I'm
even
wearing proudly today.
That's it exactly.
Oh,
just replace the balloons with the pidgeys.
So anyway, back in, Arlan was like, I'm sorry, mates. Things are starting to take a bit of a turn because I've been rumbled. So enter a new character by the name of David. David was obsessed with Ponzi schemes and had a website outing Ponzi schemes. And he got his hooks into this business and would not let it rest.
Yeah.
He was like, this is a Ponzi scheme. This man is destroying our farmers' businesses. We need to take him down. And nobody much listened to David until a little magazine, let me get up the name here, did listen to David. And wrote an expose trying to bring down the Pigeon King. At this point, Arlan had kind of had a limited company called the Pigeon King. And he was definitely not happy with the focus that turned onto the company. Because a little lifting of the scab and you could see the mess that this was in. But also the families who were like, we've put, you know, we've cashed in our life savings into this. We have 100,000 pigeons in our garden. Are you trying to tell me that you're going to stop collecting the chicks? Because what are we going to do with the pigeons?
Oh,
and where is
no.
my money?
But like, Arlan, is Arlan even getting anything out of this?
No. Stress.
He's getting
so
stressed.
Yes.
And also the thing is, the money was sort of, there was money coming in.
There was just, there?
He didn't have a handle on it. Like he was still selling to new, but he needed the new families and the new farmers to sign up.
In and out. In.
Yeah, leave no trace.
Looks
cash
great,
out.
But it was just going out the door.
Oh, Jesus.
The thing about David, who had the website, David J. Thornton, was he was 75. He had a history of difficulties with people. For instance, he once got into an altercation with an elementary school girl while handing out his website, Crime Busters Now Literature, outside a school near Toronto.
What age was she?
I think she was about 11.
Oh,
and
very trying age.
Yeah, so apparently he grabbed her by the waist to try and get her to pay attention to what he was saying.
Oh, no.
And of course he was
no.
arrested.
Oh, God.
Charges later dropped. Now, he, at this point, had nothing to lose. And he would not let Arlan out of his snatches. And it,
75.
Were, it, the year was 2007. So the business had been going 6 years. And this was its eighth year. And he, our man Arlan was tired. And he didn't have too much fight left in him. And he knew, he tried the whole pigeon as chickens. It wasn't taken off. No one was buying.
like pigeon licking good. It's pigeon. Just a little, it just doesn't have the same ring.
Certainly not. And I'm sad for him. KFP. And we should be sad for him. But the thing about the whole Ponzi scheme is, yeah, he's fucked it up. He could have, it could have kind of been a somewhat successful Ponzi scheme if he let just, the people sell their own fucking
yeah,
chicks.
Yeah, if he'd yeah. just gone the then right
then you're
direction.
Just in the pigeon trade.
Yes. Now, enter the email that came around. Arlen knew the gig was up. He was like, I have to let everybody know. And it's looking like things are going very, very, they're going to go very badly. So he wrote an email blaming David J. Thornton from Crime Busters Now website that he'd scuppered his business by putting people off buying the race pigeons and he could no longer continue.
Oh.
And he's very sorry. He is sorry, but I won't be buying any more chicks. And sorry. And that was the end. Now, that was the end, except it wasn't. Because what the fuck am I going to do with 500,000 pigeons? Like, the authorities in Toronto were like, you can't release these birds into our skies. It will be chaos. They'll completely take over. So then,
Shit everywhere.
And just the visual upsettingness of too many birds.
It is very scary. Stressful. When you see loads and loads of birds in the sky.
You always think like they're onto something. What do they know? What do they know that I don't
know?
The
other day here, there were 12 magpies sitting outside.
Freaks.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I was like, I'm going to win the lotto. I didn't.
Yes.
It was very upsetting.
So the email said, my heart is breaking as I write this letter. The company, Pigeon King International, is dead in the water.
International.
And has been reduced to ashes by fear brought on by slanderous underhand smear campaign brought upon me by a handful of jealous protesters bent on destroying me. So, yes, I accept that you're annoyed.
Yeah.
But you've made an absolute balls of this.
You absolutely have.
So he said, you can blame the ringleader David.
Yeah.
And poof, in a puff of smoke, he was gone.
Ooh.
Wasn't answering any phone calls. Oh. One of the sword farmers came after him, tried to find his address, found his address, looking in the windows of his house, couldn't find him.
No shit. Fake own death, a la Crafter?
Kind of, but he just disappeared. He went to live in a van and he was like, I'll keep moving around and I'll just pretend none of this ever happened. But what happened behind the scenes then was the farmers left with thousands and thousands of pigeons. Told by authorities, you cannot release these birds en masse because of the terrible things that will happen.
Mm.
So they were like, oh shit, we're going to have to do away with these birds. And they had to. So one farmer.
Jesus. Why didn't they try and release them into the ocean?
Just kind of to the, some of them
just
did by way of
them
a
into the waters and just sort of go like, look, if they don't live, it's not quite us incinerating them.
Well, incinerating, not so much.
Poison?
Not again. No. Sometimes hand-to-hand combat
with
the neck of 1,000
oh,
pigeons.
Oh fucking hell!
Over 2 hours, you could take 1,000 down.
You know what you could
down.
Do in there? You could just bring a chainsaw
and just and go just at it. Hell for
Leatherface. Just you know when he does the little dance at the end and he's like,
you could.
That's what we should do for our first patron-only watch party. My favourite, TCM.
We should do that.
Yeah.
Right. Here's what happened. Some of them, so pigeons are sort of docile in the evening hours. So easy to put into a burlap sack.
Oh, Jesus.
And then bring to a river.
Oh, no.
And hold it underwater.
No.
Oh, no.
Yeah, right. And others, like I said, over a 2.5 hour period, broke the neck of 1,000 chickens.
Fucking hell.
Jesus.
Yeah, but there was nothing they could do. They couldn't afford to feed them. You can't sell them on. Eating them is, as we've discussed, annoying and not, it's not enough meat.
Jesus.
I mean, you probably could eat a few, but you know, who has a refrigerator that big?
Who has the time
and
for the
time
deboning?
For the plucking.
Jamie Oliver.
So in the end, there was many, many deaths.
Fucking hell.
And, you know, then Arlen, living in a van, was brought to prison.
Justice?
Brought to justice by way of his own hand because he was like, I'll represent myself here. Who knows the business better than me?
So he did reappear to stand trial.
He did.
And what did they charge him
over
with?
Over 2 years, they charged him with fraud, Ponzi scheme.
They should have charged him with like 500,000 pigeon deaths.
potentially that was rolled in. I'm not sure, but he represented himself in the most frustrating manner, having no kind of understanding of the law.
Comedy ties.
Yeah. He literally was in a comedy tie. He said he kept making reference to the fact that he was completely broke, which he was. This was kind of his argument. If this was a Ponzi scheme, wouldn't I be rolling in dough?
Oh, I can picture him
with
like... This is a
really bad business.
It was just a bad business. Mm. God love him.
I feel like I can picture him with like a little kind of... bow tie that just goes oh.
Yeah.
And being like, guys,
he's got like a flower in his lapel that when you bend over to smell it, squirts water at you.
Squirts pigeon
he's
shit.
He's that kind of guy.
I'm the pigeon king. Oh. My pigeons love me.
The pigeon king's wings were clipped and he went to jail for 8 years.
Eight years.
And that is just a classic case of someone dumb going to prison.
Isn't it?
It is not. I don't think he
wasn't like a mastermind of some sort of... He just let it all run out. It was like the yarn stories. He just got carried away. And the swiftness with which these birds were reproducing was... Well, you couldn't believe it. Yeah. Like rabbits. Will I finish?
Yes. Yeah.
That's the end of the story. That's the end of the Pigeon King. But that's not to put anybody off pigeoning. Fancying racing, it's a huge gig, and not only if you're bored with the speed element, you can get into tumbling.
What, like they fall over?
They tumble in the air. Okay. They're called rollers.
Oh,
so this Birmingham, there's a Birmingham roller. It's a type of pigeon. So they go up in the air and they like fall by rolling, and you'll count the number of rotations they do. Mm. And that I know, Soph.
It's like a triple axel.
Exactly. So you'll find,
What does the thing tell you?
Which?
You said count the spins.
You'll count the number of spins they do. And then if yours did 8 in a row, you win.
Boom.
Oh.
So you'll have these
some
men.
Some science to it.
It seems to be all men. I couldn't find any women, I'm sure, but I didn't look specifically for women.
Do you think that women are just off doing something more important?
I don't know. Yeah.
I don't want to denigrate a hobby, obviously.
No. Hobbies are great, but like often then the birds will go back into the cage in someone's back garden. It doesn't look like a great life for the bird, but maybe not.
They lived I had a friend whose dad was into pigeons, and it was like an outhouse, like little stone kind of shed.
Yeah.
And it was absolutely racked and stacked with the pigeons.
They didn't
have very much space. It was like a little, do you know those kind of old letter boxes you see in the States?
Yeah.
That you kind of slot in and it like just about held a pigeon.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe he just wasn't a great pigeon owner.
Yeah, I'm sure there's loads of good ones. But again.
The Pigeon King. And I'd say he was fucking sick when Tiger King was a big hit on Netflix. And he was like, I was a fucking Pigeon King long before that.
I'd watch The Pigeon King sooner than I'd watch season 2 of Tiger King.
Me too. God, yeah. Season 2, what a fucking
reach. What were they doing?
I forgot to say that.
Rehashing a lot of
stretch.
Stuff.
Ireland's claim to fame was, sold a couple of pigeons to Tyson.
That's
the Tyson connection.
That's like full circle, weren't you talking about at the start of the
And I came back around again.
I love Kaboom. It. Circling back,
there you
as
go.
They
you
say, in the parlance of our times.
Touch.
And our artistic storytelling there is what that was.
Thank you.
You should get the old basic artist income.
You would think.
Cass, what are you thinking?
What are you cooking?
Let me tell you about the Matilda effect. Not named after Roald Dahl's Matilda, but instead named after a woman called Matilda Jocelyn Gage, who was a suffragist and an abolitionist from... In the early 1900s.
One hot piece of ass.
She wrote a...
Objectify.
Yeah, of course. Just do all the things that she fought against. She wrote an essay called Women as in the Inventor. And in this essay outlined how often women working in certain roles made incredible advances, and it was just a male colleague or a husband that took credit for the work. And I think this is really important, because when you look back on history and you look at how the world has evolved and how women are still treated in the workplace, and there is still such disparity between male and women and their earning potential and the proportion of women in C-suite positions and as owners of companies, etc., 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 it all comes back to, well, women only entered the workforce and the 50s or 60s, and we've got catching up to do and all that kind of stuff, and don't women go off and have babies, isn't it very hard? And actually that's all just a fucking lie. It's all just a lie.
Well, we're very emotional, like
we're too
we
emotional to do anything
jobs, and we obviously bleed once a month
completely,
so God knows what paganism we're up
you
to.
Cannot trust us. And sure, women have never done anything important ever throughout the history of time, but they have We've done so many important things, right?
Of course we have.
So this is really prolific across STEM and across arts as well. So you know the famous example of Margaret Keane, who was an artist in the 1960s. Husband, Walter, became famous for his big eye paintings.
Big eye.
Characterized by the...
Walter Keane. Yeah.
Characterized by the oversized eyes of the artwork subjects. They were hugely popular in kind of 1960 to 1970. And in 1970, Keane's ex-wife, Margaret, explained finally on a radio station that she was the real painter behind the Big Eye series. When they were challenged then to a paint-off in Union Square, Walter didn't even turn up.
Yeah, I mean, what could you do? Do you know Siri Hustvedt wrote this amazing novel about, well, in this wheelhouse called this The Blazing World. And I feel like creeps would really enjoy it because it's basically about an artist who assumes a male identity, a woman artist who assumes a male identity.
There's a lot of that now.
And basically like exposes the hypocrisy of the art world and how gendered attitudes are when you know that it's a woman artist or a non-binary artist or a person of marginalized identity.
There was one example.
Blazing World, it's excellent.
I will get to one example in a minute, right? This one, infuriating. Elizabeth Maggie was a game designer. Okay, like a board game designer. She was born in 1866 and she was kind of a, like of liberal political views, hated greed and this idea of the overpriced properties, very much like what we have today, but we're talking about 1916, I think it was, when she invented a board game as a sort of game that philosophized against landlord greed.
Interesting.
Was it called Monopoly?
Well, no. She believed that all the profits, she was kind of Georgism in her beliefs and believed that all the profits of the work done on the land should then be redistributed amongst the people, you know, kind of an equal society. And so she designed this game called the Landlord's Game that helped demonstrate her beliefs. The game had a square board, fake money, a go-to-jail square, and it was played in two rounds. In the first round, it was called anti-monopolist, when the players had to pool together, buy land, and the profits were shared equally. And then the second round was called monopolist, where you were to go around and try and gain all of the money and bankrupt your rivals. But it started crushing. As a parody of society.
Well, exactly. And then they just took the bad bit and ran
and
with
just
it.
Well, ran with it, yes.
This is how it happened. So the Landlord's Game became so popular between Maggie's friends that she applied for a patent in, so it was 1903 when she invented this game. And it started spreading very organically throughout her friends' circles and people playing it. It was very fashionable in left-wing circles and with individuals often kind of like taking the rules of her game and creating their version of the board, but playing it and attributing it back to Lizzie Maggie, who had invented it, right? There was this man, a salesman, who was going through a period of unemployment. He'd previously been a heater salesman called Charles Darrow. And he adapted the idea, added the coloured neighbourhoods and illustrations on the board, and he sold the game to the Parker Brothers in 1935, becoming the first person to ever earn $1 million off a board game known as Monopoly.
Was he connected to her at all?
He witnessed friends of hers play the game.
No way.
So he was
divide a friend group.
But did she ever have any comeback on that?
Well, she had pitched the game to the Parker Brothers prior to that. And they said no to her, that they didn't like the two-rounded effect. But instead of working with her and developing it further, yeah, they said no. And then it was a couple of years later that Charles Darrow came in, pitched the game. And for years and years and years, Monopoly has been solely attributed to this guy Darrow. It was even the story of its creation was even printed in the booklet on the game.
No mention of her.
It said in 1934, Charles B. Darrow of Germantown, Pennsylvania, presented a game called Monopoly to the executives of Parker Brothers.
Oh my God.
It was the game's exciting promise of fame and fortune that initially prompted Darrow to produce this game on his own. So she was not credited as Monopoly's creator
What's
during her
name
lifetime.
Again,
Lizzie Maggie.
We need this.
I am more angry about this than not having the vote. This is fucked up.
That
is
Parker fucked. Brothers went back and they gave her $500
and to go away.
Basically, and then they said they would produce her version of the game, the Landlord's game, but they never produced enough for her to earn any money back on it. So they only produced a small number of them. And so she died relatively poor, whereas Charles B. Darrow became an absolute fucking millionaire off it. Now, since there was like an essay or a kind of a story done about this, and it all came to light in later years, recently enough in our history. And so now, any original copies of the Landlord's Game are the most sought after board game collector's game. Mm. And it actually looks beautiful, very, very similar to a Monopoly board, but it's a little bit more intricate. And it's just a gorgeous, it's a gorgeous little game.
Maggie's game. What's her name? Let's have a look at that.
So her name is Elizabeth Maggie, but everyone called her Lizzie. So Lizzie Maggie. And it's called the Landlord's Game. So have a little look at that.
Mad. And copies of her.
So they're the collectors. They're collectors.
Such a sad irony.
Yeah. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah. Excuse me.
But that's just one example, right?
God, that's a shocker.
It's horrendous, isn't it? But there's so many more examples to get into. So let's talk about. Well, this one was. Have you seen the film Hidden Figures?
Yeah.
Beautiful film. Yeah. So that is about.
Although there is an annoying Kevin Costner saving the day kind of moment.
Yeah, of course there is, right?
That's his name, isn't it?
This is about, is it Kevin Costner in it? Probably.
It's kind of generic man. Is it Tom Hanks?
Go to Hidden Figures there. Oh, both are like, I can see both of them in it because I have this like mental blindness for men's faces. Just gone. I'm like, he's got short hair and he's tall. He's white. Can't.
Except for our fave men.
Fate, mem. I do you. Have to turn down That's the. You. I don't hate men. I just want that to be said. I love men.
TM.
But not in.
Not this
not
one.
Not in high profile positions. That is it. Yeah.
Okay.
So who's the male star?
So the one male star.
It's great anyway, to see them in the minority for once.
It is.
Three women, yeah, one exactly. man.
It's the story of Katherine Johnson, a mathematician in the 1950s. So Katherine Johnson worked alongside other women analyzing data and performing complex mathematical calculations for NASA.
They were called computers.
They Ooh. Were called computers who wore skirts.
Ah.
Yeah, so there was a just
got a differentiate.
Little je ne sais quoi of misogyny on top. So she was the first woman and the first person of color to join an all-male team in NASA in 1953. And she was so talented that she was able to break down racial and gender barriers, ensuring that she was finally included in meetings to which women had never been invited before. Much of her work went uncredited as women were not allowed to put their names on reports until a point when she filled in for a colleague, did the entire report by herself, and they had no choice but to credit her on the report. So she knew that it was like, it was with every sort of like disdain that they put her name finally on a report. But she did kind of get a claim because she did the calculations for the trajectories of the first American in space. She did more key projections in the space race, and indicative of her importance to NASA, astronaut John Glenn requested that Katherine be the woman to check all of the calculations before anything happened.
Amazing.
That she would be right there.
She's like the last barrier.
Yeah, because she was
enacted.
Heavy responsibility.
Yeah.
The smartest woman by a landslide, right? Then we have an Australian actress. Sorry, Austrian American actress called Heidi Lamarr, who was born in 1914. So she was often described as the most beautiful woman in the world and remembered for Hollywood appearances. But she was a keen inventor, and she invented or kind of made a discovery on frequency hopping, which which I'm going to get to in a second, which is super important, but became the basis of so much of the science and technology that we have at our fingertips today, right? So during her downtime when she wasn't in movies, she was tinkering away in her trailer, and She was actually a lover of Howard Hughes, the square-shaped aeroplane, and she helped design...
I thought you meant the man. The piss collector.
Who's Howard Hughes?
Is he not the eccentric, reclusive aviator?
Yeah. That's him. Piss collection. He invented the square-shaped aeroplane wings.
Sorry, when you said the Howard Hughes, I thought you... Well,
no, is of that what her lover Howard again? Hughes. I don't know what they call the airplane, but he was the guy behind the square-shaped wings. But actually, Heidi was, because she studied books on birds and fish and animals that could fly and improved the design of the airplane and suggested it be squared. Obviously, never to get credit for it. She also improved traffic light design. Anyway, it was during World War II. Yeah. It was during World War II that she started getting interested in frequency hopping. So torpedoes were controlled by radio waves, which were often intercepted by the enemy and then thrown off track.
Okay.
I don't understand how that works. They're obviously on, like, I don't know how a torpedo is controlled by radio waves, but it is.
Okay.
And that's dangerous because it can be tampered with, right? Now, she didn't have any formal training in what that meant. So she collaborated with an inventor and a composer called George Antheil. And she suggested that the radio frequency would change up at rapid pace so that they wouldn't be able to intercept it, that it would move from frequency to frequency. This frequency hopping idea, right? Which is the precursor to Wi-Fi, GPS, and Bluetooth.
Fucking hell, lads. Yeah.
So she actually got the patent alongside Antheil, and though it was later used by the military, she did not receive any credit for her invention during her lifetime. And when she wanted to join the National Inventors Council, which seems to be a dream of hers, they were told her that she should focus on her movies and her time would be better spent as a pin-up selling war bonds.
Gross.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Okay, and then this one is super interesting. I mean, they're all super interesting and depressing. There's so many. There's just
that's the creep
so
vibe in a nutshell. Super interesting.
There is so many. Oh yeah, sorry. One I have to shout out. Right. What's the most what's the most significant thing you learned in maths in school?
Pythagoras.
Oh, I was going to say the quadratic equation.
Pythagoras's theorem. Right.
Nicked it from Pythagoras.
Oh, nice.
He nicked it from Theno of Croton, which was his wife.
Behind every great man.
Yeah. So, just another woman who'd come up with something. There's all these other quick examples. Nettie Stevens, she discovered the XY sex determination system during her crucial study of mealworms. And she revealed for the first time that an organism's sex is determined by its chromosomes rather than its environment or other factors. I don't know what they thought influenced sex before that.
Sure.
So she was greatly influenced by the scientific community's transition into this line of inquiry. But it was Thomas Hunt Morgan, a distinguished geneticist of the time, that was credited with this discovery. There's just so many more. I'll tell you one more before I finish up and then recommend that people
draw it out.
The ENIAC programmers. ENIAC or ENIAC, it's ENIAC programmers. So this was in 1946. Six women worked together to build the first ever completely electronic programmable computer.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Amazing. What year?
1946. So Kathleen Antonio, Jean Bartik, Francis Hulberton, Marilyn Metzer, Francis Spence, and Ruth Teitelbaum were tasked with programming the first ENIAC electronic integrator and computer. And they were tasked by the US Army by the University of Pennsylvania School of Electrical Engineering. So the computer was to be used in the ongoing World War II to work out artillery trajectories. However, the project was top secret, so the identities of the woman who had programmed the computer were never revealed.
Convenient.
The six female programmers were uncredited for their work until 1980s, when a Harvard student named Kathy Kleiman stumbled upon a photo of the women with the computer.
Oh my God.
While researching a thesis on early programmers and software developers. So she inquired about the image and was told that they were models.
No.
They were models posing with the computer to make the computer seem more appealing. Them. But what? Delving further, she discovered that they had been the original programmers. Now, the computer itself had issues, but it was incredible.
Why were they all women? I mean, was that something?
The men were off at war and stuff.
Kind of, yeah. And maybe it was just they were top of their class. I mean, we know that women outperform men throughout their entire academic careers, and it's only when they leave college and go into the workplace that some fucking switch happens and men start to outearn women and outprogress women at a rapid rate.
It's so interesting that, like, it just took, the men being preoccupied with something else for a moment for, you know.
A small takeover.
Yeah.
What, did you have someone else there, Soph?
Oh, it made me think of that story of Busy Phillips and Blades of Glory. Do you remember this story?
Vaguely.
You know Blades of Glory with Will Ferrell?
Yes.
And it was like an ice skating
yeah.
movie.
Yeah.
From the 2000s, maybe. Yeah. And I just remember in her book, this is going to hurt, or this will only hurt a little. The story of originating that movie idea with the two men who were ever ultimately credited with the movie. Like, she had the idea, worked on the outline, worked on the initial script, everything, and was completely written out of
the
whole movie. Like, and had to fight, legally, to prove her involvement. And I don't know, another more recent example.
Mm. It's just constant. It's everywhere. Harriet Zuckerman was another woman, and she wrote this kind of concept called the Matthew effect. And the Matthew effect is very interesting. It's often surmised as the idea that the rich get rich and the poor get poorer. It's the idea of like compounded success, that like if you win something, the likelihood of you winning something else is increased. And like the more friends you have, the more attractive you are to potential friends. So like everything compounds. It's fascinating.
It's like snowballs.
Yeah. And there's often the Matthew effect is also attributed to male scientists. And it basically says that the most prominent male scientist in the room or in the organization will be credited for the work, despite who comes up with it.
Mm.
And funny enough, the woman who wrote that concept was a woman called Harriet Zuckerman, and the concept was credited to her husband.
Oh, God.
Happy days.
I feel super privileged people call it the law of attraction now.
And oh, the yeah. Secret. Yeah, exactly. Manifesting.
Manifesting, yes.
Another scientist, Martha Gautier, she was born in 1925. She made a discovery in the chromosomal abnormality that causes Down syndrome, and that discovery was credited to a man called Jerome Lejeune. It's just everywhere. And an interesting point is that there was a neurobiologist called Ben Bars. He was a Stanford University medical student who transitioned from female to male and spoke of his scientific achievements having been perceived differently depending on what sex others thought he was at the time. So prior to his transition to male, he said his scientific achievements were ascribed to men or devalued, but after transitioning to male, his achievements were lauded. The same.
Fascinating.
Same work that
but
he was working
surprising.
On. Yeah. And then there's just all these other fantastic examples of times when men got Nobel Prizes. On the back of the work of women. In 1934, the Nobel Prize in physiology or medicine was awarded to George Whippy, George Richards Minot, and William P. Murphy. Mm. And their female co-worker, Frieda Robstreit Robbins, was excluded on the grounds for sex. However, Whippy shared the prize money with her and said that she deserved the Nobel Prize since she was the co-author on all of his publications.
What did they discover?
I don't know.
DNA.
Oh, the team that discovered DNA were There was a woman at that. Hold on, I have her on a list here.
I love how exhausted Cassie sounded there.
I don't have
this. Just yet another thing that was attributed to a nearby man.
Exactly. You there, sir. You'll do.
Yeah.
You're in the room here. Do you want a Nobel Prize? Rosalind Franklin was recognized as an important contributor to the 1953 discovery of DNA structure. But at the time of the discovery, it was Francis Crick and James Watson who received the 1962 Nobel Prize.
Yeah.
Her work was not properly credited, even though Watson described her contribution in his 1968 book, The Double Helix. But it's just...
exhausting.
Absolutely exhausting. Hold on, I had one more.
I feel like TikTok's going to have a field day with this.
Why?
Oh, you know the way they love to be like...
oh, women.
But you're ugly.
Oh, what was her name? Matilda Fecht. It was something bold.
They're being nice to us now.
Oh God, don't trust that either.
They're luring us in.
Don't believe the good and don't believe the bad. That's my motto.
Oh yeah, this one. Oh my goodness, this one was so bad. So this was a woman called Alice Ball. She was born in 1892 in Washington. Her parents, like her grandparents, were successful photographers, and she wanted to go forth and study science, right? Interestingly, she was a black woman and her parents wrote white on her birth cert, and so she moved through college. She managed to acquire two bachelor degrees from the University of Washington, one in pharmaceutical chemistry and another in pharmacy. And she published a 10-page paper alongside her pharmacy instructor, but she didn't get any credit for it, right? Now, at the time, leprosy was still a huge issue, and they discovered that a treatment from the kava plant, an oil from the kava plant, could be used to treat leprosy. But the problem was that the oil was so potent and disgusting that nobody could drink it. It was just horrendous. They couldn't consume it. And then when they tried to inject it, it caused a burning sensation and it was just not effective. So it was Alice Ball who took the, I think it was the fats out of the oil, managed to create a mixture that could then be injected without burning and with very few side effects, and was a really effective treatment for leprosy that was used for more than 30 years. But when Alice was in the lab, she was very young. They were studying, she was studying chemical warfare at this point in time. And she was in the lab in 1916, and they were doing all these like health and safety classes and precautions against using gas and how to use gas masks in the lab. And the story was that she either was teaching someone how to put on their gas mask or hadn't got the mask on, and she was exposed to a poisonous chlorine gas.
Oh God.
Which caused her death.
Yeah.
No.
In the lab. Now, some
That's a death terrible report, way to die as well.
Yeah, some death reports attributed her death to TB, but it was, she died in the lab after that gas Jesus. Thing anyway. And her colleague, Arthur L. Dean, stole all of her research and published it as her own. It was only for there had been another man her supervisor, Dr. Harry Holman, had been talking to her about the work that she was doing. So it was years later that she was finally attributed to the person who had discovered this effective cure and treatment for leprosy.
Wow.
But for a very long time, it was this colleague, Arthur Dean, who got the praise for it.
Bastard.
Absolutely.
God almighty.
Prickology.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
God, it's so annoying.
It's just so difficult for women to even get in the room. And then when they get in the room, men fucking steal their ideas or steal the credit for the work and then say things like, oh, they're just models posing with this computer. And they focus so much. The story of the computer is particularly interesting because the ENIAC, the ENAC programmers or whatever, that is like, you know, there were men involved, obviously, in the creation of the first computers and stuff. But they focus so much on the hardware. And they were like, this is the system, this is the machine, but like the actual workings of it and the program, the language that they came up with was like the basis of so many programming languages that are still used, and they didn't get attributed to the work that they did in the proper, like, that's the magic stuff. Do you know? The software stuff is...
They know they can weld metal to create the case and the mechanics of it, but writing the software, writing the code was the brand new element.
I guess at the time as well, there was just no way that they were going to get credit.
It's so interesting that like a lot of the things you listed there were happening in the kind of 1910s. The 1930s and 40s.
Yeah.
It's just like a league of their own.
Yeah, it is.
You know?
Very much so.
Great flick. Gina Highly Davies. Recommend a revisit. What a ride.
Anyway, thanks, Cass. That was annoying. But yes, that's history, and good that we're talking about it now, and excellent to
That's the Matilda effect. And it's interesting because when you look back in history and you look at all the like great historical moments that we all study and we all learn about, and the politicians and yada, 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 and all that kind of stuff, it's all men, because who decided what was going in the history books? More men. Mm-hmm. So there's this whole wealth of... there's this wealth of women throughout history who are not acknowledged. If you do want to hear more about women in history, we did a podcast a couple of years ago called Her Story with RTE, and they are on Spotify, I believe, on the RTE website. And it's 16 different women that were profiled through different episodes.
Nice.
There you go.
Can I give a plug as well if you want to hear more about women in history? I had an amazing show last night that's going to become a monthly show, and it's with Bláthnaid Ennis, who is a stand-up comedian, and she is working with a comedy night called Hysteria, a comedy club called Hysteria, that's all for women, for non-binary, for the gays and the theys, and it's just going to be really inclusive and amazing. And she's basically doing this night once a month in Chennai. I went last night, it was amazing. Because it was the anniversary of The Rising, she was kind of doing a comedy with an amazing panel of like academics and researchers, all about our amazing Irish women who've just been completely written out of the history of The Rising and the history of academia in Ireland. And it was fucking sensational. So follow at Hysteria Comedy on Instagram, and
we'll write
Bláthnaid, whose Instagram name is at being Blah. And just come to the next one. It was amazing, and the stories were incredible.
Sounds great. Thanks, Sophs. So speaking of women doing good things, you're about to do something good for our hive. Please tee us up.
So I am doing Jeffrey Dahmer. I don't know how else to say it. I've had to consume only dry snacks, dry meals for days and days now. I am so full of information about this. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm going to really try and hop, skip and jump through 17 pages of notes. It's a big font.
Nice. Come over to the hive if that tickles your fancy. You never know.
It's going to be a two-parter, I would imagine, unless I can, or I could talk double time.
It could be a hearty meal anyway.
Yes.
See you there. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.
Little bit of house creeping before we go. Okay, so the Creep Dive patron, that is patreon.com/thecreepdive, is hopping and bopping as usual. Love it over there. We do our real libelous shit over there, to be honest. When we release videos of the main episode, of course. See our beautiful faces. And we are now basically cutting costs.
Yeah.
We're phasing out the free tote for every new patron. I hope you understand that it's times are tight, inflation, everything. But what we are doing instead is every month we're doing a lottery of Creep Dive merch for three lucky patrons. It will be chosen at random from our whole amazing patron family. So everyone who's joined the patron up until today, Monday 25th of April. And I'll run this till midnight tonight. So if you jump... Wait, this goes out tomorrow, doesn't it?
To midnight till the 26th of April. 26th.
So the day that this is out, I will run the... anyone who's joining up until midnight, the 26th of April, will get their tote, their Launcher Larry tote. And after that, we are introducing a monthly lottery. It's going to be awesome because we have t-shirts, we have mugs, we have totes. You could get very, very lucky. Mm-hmm. And also, we are introducing an amazing new feature on the Patreon for extra special creeps who want to just give us a little
a new tier
hand yeah. financially.
So we're going to do a live something once a month. So we're going to have an extra tier that'll crop up on your Patreon. I don't know whether they'll be alerted or you could sign up to it if you were signing up.
We can send an email to them all and let them know we're a new
exactly.
tier.
Exactly. Yeah.
There we go.
So it's going to be a monthly watch party with us and it's going to be really fun, interactive. It's basically going to be a big callback to the old Zooms of old times.
Exactly.
We're going to have parties and pageants and chats and games and watch scary movies together and watch crazy documentaries together. You know what we should watch? No, actually, why am I suggesting
Sister Act 2.
Yes. Yes, that's way better than Capturing the Freedmans, which is what I was about to suggest. No to that. Okay. Thank you all so much, and especially thank you to our patrons.
Bye. Bye.